Hello everybody, and welcome to this video, which is kindly sponsored by Squarespace. Well, today I'm going to show you how easy it is to upgrade a section of your site. So here we are, this is the Photo Archive homepage, and as you can see, it's all been done in links before, but there's now quite a lot of links. So I'm going to put a button in instead, that's a little bit clearer. And as you can see, I'm going to title it the Broughton Archive, because that's the first link there. Go to URL, and then I can select from pre-existing links, but obviously there's a lot of hidden web pages that I can link to within my site. So instead of searching through all of them, I can just do /br, and that finds me my Broughton Archive page. Click to open it in a new tab if I want to do that. And it's all ready to go. Quick test, click. Yep, that works perfectly fine. And I think the button looks a lot clearer. Now I can obviously go down and put another one in, and this one obviously is going to be British Ironclad, so whatever I want to title it, it automatically changes the button. And once again, I can just do /br, find British Ironclads, and that's in there. And then of course, I can move things around as well. So if I want to do a grid, as you can see, I can put the buttons in a grid form, but since that's donated archives and British Ironclads is my archives, I'm going to put them separate for the minute. But I'll come back and sort that out a bit more later on. Nice and easy. So if after all these little mini tutorials I've been doing, you think you could build a website for maybe ideally naval history purposes, but you never know, you might want to do it for some other reason, then head over to squarespace.com/Drakenefell. You can get a free trial, and once you're ready, that little link will give you 10% off your first website or domain. So thanks once again to Squarespace for sponsoring the video, and on with the main show. Right, so final part of our tour of Kidd. We're actually in the upper hall of the USS Kidd Veterans Museum, because the whole thing is a veterans museum.
Correct.
Just, quote unquote, a museum ship. So there's a bunch of ship models, there's a bunch of veterans displays all along the walls there, and of course we have here a builder's model of USS New Orleans, which is quite a fantastic site. Builder's models are always good. The ship, in case you're wondering, is to your left, my right, just out there. And, well, if you happen to be following Kidd on Twitter or Facebook, you will unfortunately occasionally see people who seem to have very bright ideas about how to preserve a museum ship when they have no experience actually preserving a museum ship. And with Kidd in particular, for those of you who are unaware, she does not rise and fall with the tide completely. She sits in a cradle, at least in theory. So when the tide is very high, she is, of course, free-floating to a degree.
There's really not a tide in Baton Rouge. It's a seasonal rise and fall based on snow melt and rainfall in the northern central part of the country.
So perhaps more accurate to say the river level.
The river level. Yes.
Yeah. So if the river level is very high, she technically is free-floating.
Yes.
But normally, even though she looks like she's floating in the river, she's actually probably just sitting on the cradle. And then obviously when the water level drops, it's very obvious.
Correct.
Now that presents some rather unique challenges compared to a quote unquote normal, if there is such a thing as a normal museum ship, because obviously that's points of contact. As I understand, there were kind of soft pads, at least as far as soft goes for ships in cradles.
Right.
And they've hardened over time, which isn't really very helpful. But, of course, so in case you're wondering, by the way, I haven't just randomly kidnapped a person and stuck a hat on them. This is...
Help me.
This is Tim. He is one of the ship's crew and one of the senior ship's crew. So he's going to talk to us for a little bit about what the actual situation is with Kidd, what the actual challenges are, and what can and can't be done about it, given the situation that she's in sitting in the river. So if you want to know the actual hull issues and what's going to be done about them, this is your chance to find out.
Well, Kidd is kind of unique. She's possibly the only museum ship out there, maybe in the world, where you're seeing her high and dry out of the water part of the year and seeing her afloat the other part of the year. Some of them are completely out of the water. Some of them are fully immersed in the water and never come out. The only one somewhat close to us, I think, is a Gearing class destroyer in South Korea. Mm-hmm. And I think she doesn't really rise and fall, but she is sitting kind of in a cradle system like mm-hmm. we are, and the tide goes out and then it comes back up. But I don't know enough about her to know whether or not the tide lifts her or just immerses her.
Right.
So there's a little bit more to learn with regard to her. But we actually will float free of the cradle. You will walk. I think you took some footage earlier going down the gangway to the ship, because we are floating, but we are not really high out of the cradle at the moment. But you come at some points, and you will be going up the cradle, up the gangway to get to the ship. So it's a really unique system back in 1982, 83, when they designed it and put her in. It being a unique system, that means that we didn't know four decades ago when I was, or three decades ago, whatever it was, when I was 12 years old and in middle school, and I want to emphasize that, what the long-term effects of that would be. And of course, we know from old wooden ships that they will hog, they will pancake if they're taken out of water. I think you guys have had some of those issues with Victory. Metal ships are the same, it just takes longer. And so one of the things that we've encountered is Kid went into dry dock for hull maintenance in 1962. And then in 64, they put her in dry dock one last time and plated over all of her intakes for the engineering spaces and everything. No real structural work, just let's slap this on, let's give her a good coat of antifouling, stick her in the reserve fleet, and that's where she's set for the next 20 years. Well, when we got her, we put her into the cradle, and I don't know that the founding fathers thought about the need to dry dock her, you know, take her away to a shipyard. I think maybe they just thought you could take it right here. But the fact is, 2,050 tons of destroyer sitting on these individual points, you can't do anything when she's out of water, because unlike a dry dock, the pads that she sits on in a dry dock are designed so that you can pop the sandbags and loosen it and slide one of them out, or this one out, or that one out, and take care of those touch points, and then slide one back in and boost it back up. And with this concrete cradle, you can't move those pads. And we've had suggestions of, go ahead and put some other pads in there. Well, those other pads aren't sitting on pilings driven way down deep in the riverbed, so those will just sink in the silt, because it's the silt can be like quicksand around her. So we actually have to take her out to take care of those touch points. The river used to go way up and stay up, and then go way down and stay down when I first got here almost 30 years ago. These days, climate change is a real thing. The river doesn't act the same way that it did before, and it may not be climate change, it just may be climate change that we haven't seen before, because we haven't been here for longer than 200, 300 years. So the river may just be in a cycle that it normally goes through. But the fact is, instead of being high and then low just twice a year, two evolutions a year, the river is up and down more, and so she's in that middle area more, which means if she's just about to float and a tug or a barge comes by with a wake, then the high part lifts her up and drops her back down, lifts her up and is hammering her. And then if she's floating, but she's not floating real high, those same wakes come by and the trough hits her and she slams down into the cradle. So it's something nobody really thought about before, and the conditions didn't exist. So all those points that have not been touched since 62 are thin. The rest of the hull is in seemingly good shape. We had some ultrasounding done, and the thickness is well within acceptable ranges, except right around those thin points and right where the keel blocks are. So if the river gets high enough this season, and we get a lot of questions, when is it happening? When are you taking the ship away? We just don't know until the river comes up. It has to reach a certain height for us to slide her out without ripping her sonar dome off, without dragging the rudder and the props. And only God knows when the river goes up. You know, we have a range where we can guess anytime between February and the end of May, but we don't know the exact date. But when it comes up high enough and we can get her out, we're going and going down to the shipyard, get in a real dry dock, get all those touch points taken care of, crop the metal out, replace metal, blaster, painter, and all the other good stuff that we need to do to her interior, to her exterior, a new paint job, and all that. And then we get to our want list after the need to list.
Yeah. And I suppose with the with these blocks, as we mentioned earlier, when they were originally put in, they had a kind of a softish, as we said, soft in the
pliable.
Yeah. You know, we're not talking about like rubber foam or anything,
no,
because that would just compress down to almost nothing immediately.
Exactly.
But you're talking more like, you know, car tire rubber pliable pistols.
Yeah.
But obviously, those kind of things harden over time, which doesn't help, because then it becomes more abrasive. Yeah. A lot more point contact. And the other thing, of course, is, as you said, you know, you can't just put more pads in arbitrarily because they're sinking into the mud, but also the ones that are there presumably are set against some of the ship's framing.
Yes.
For support.
Yeah, you don't want to just sit them anywhere on the ship.
If you just put them on a hull plate, it's just going to punch straight through the hull plating because, you know, it's a destroyer. They don't have particularly thick hulls, but to be perfectly honest, at the level where those pads are, it wouldn't match if it's a destroyer, a cruiser, or a battleship, because right, it's well below the water.
It's going to warp it.
It's just going to be hull plating at that point. It's not, even if she had an armor belt, it would be below the belt.
Right. They call them tin cans for a reason.
Yeah, and I mean the thing is, I suppose it's an example of one of these things where a single incident, or like you said, a couple of incidents a year as she goes up and down, wouldn't be a problem.
Right.
But it's repetition over time. Each point, each impact is scraping away just the tiniest little bit of metal. And then if rust comes in, rust is more vulnerable, it's more fragile. And the next impact, that takes away just a little bit more and a little bit more and a little bit more until eventually you have issues.
Yes. It's a cumulative effect. And a lot of people, talking about Battleship Texas, a lot of people have been like, drag her up on land, put her in a cradle just like the kid. And it's like, you know, there's drawbacks to every system, and what you have to factor in is, in your local environment with your particular ship and your particular ship's needs, you have to make the best call with the best technology that's available to you at the time. And that's what they did here, and it's worked wonderfully, but it's not the cure-all for every ship out there, as we're demonstrating.
Yeah. And I mean, as you said, the last time she's been in dry dock was 64.
64 just to plate over the cover, 62 for actual hull maintenance.
So you're talking about a ship that hasn't been in dry dock for longer than most people watching this video have been alive.
It's true, longer than I've been alive.
So, you know, the fact that she's only experiencing issues now shows a remarkable degree of care and attention has been taken to her.
Absolutely, and she's sitting in fresh water, so that's a plus. We blasted and painted her exterior below from the waterline down in 98 and took care of the mooring system in 99. So it's not like she's been ignored. A lot of people will see what they claim is rust all over the bottom, and it's actually not rust. When she was painted, blast and painted, they had three coatings. The bottommost was silver, then the second one was tan, and then the third was the red, just like the red antifoulant that you would see. But we didn't put antifoulant because that turns colors in fresh water versus salt water, which happened the first time around. So a lot of the red is beginning to disappear in some areas of the ship, but you'll see still some tiny flecks appearing. And the tan undercoat, the secondary coat, is actually the same, almost the same color as the silt that you'll see us washing off of her. And so what you're seeing isn't rust, you're seeing the remnants of the red paint. And I can say this because I pressure washed her this spring, this past spring, and I'm standing there looking at it. And, you know, the hull is in good shape under the waterline. Not a lot of rust. The most of the rust you'll see is where you would expect, back around the props and the rudder and everything, where you've got those dissimilar metals. But further up, not nearly that much rust.
Yeah, so this is the important thing to bear in mind, is that whilst sometimes speculation can be fun, at the end of the day, you know, people who look after museum ships are generally not amateurs. You know, they've been doing this for a while, and if they have been doing it for a while, that usually means they've been doing a good enough job, because, you know, yes, occasionally you can get a ship that's taken over by an organization that really doesn't do too good a job with it. But the thing is, when that happens, ships tend to deteriorate very, very quickly.
Yes.
And then they either go to scrap, or that organization gets replaced by someone who actually knows what they're doing. So, you know, the fact that these guys have been looking after the ship for decades, they know what they're doing. And when they turn around and say, look, this is actually the case, it's like, okay, maybe up before then, if there wasn't an explanation before, fine, you know, speculate away, because that's all the information you've got to hand. But once the actual information comes out, you kind of have to listen. you know, if you're asking a question, be prepared to accept the answer, even if the answer isn't what you want. And at the end of the day, let's face it, if we're interested in museumships, we're interested in them surviving, we're interested in them continuing on. And in that case, if the issue is known and the way to fix it is known and the path to fixing it is known, well, great, this is fantastic. We don't need to argue about it anymore. We just have to support the effort to try and actually get it done. And on that note, what is the best way for people to support KID?
The best way for people to support KID, spread the word about us going to dry dock and the need for help, because yes, we did get a grant from the state of Louisiana, but that's just going to cover the bare bones fixing the hull maintenance. We've got a want list a mile long of stuff we want to do. One of these things is to take and rip out a post-war dumbwaiter and the changes that went around it and the fire control equipment they put in there and put back the World War II bunking that was in that space. And the reason, it's just another set of bunks, right? But the importance behind these bunks is that this was the living space for the African-American crew, because during World War II, the crews were segregated. And these guys' living space was separate from everything else that you've ever seen when you've toured KID. So being able to put this back, we can also go through the crew roster, find, because there was only one job they could have on ship, which was steward's mates, and we can pull every name of every steward's mate in World War II, and we can represent these guys and tell their story. And KID inches that much closer back to what she was in World War II and accurately represent her crew across the spectrum.
And this is the other important thing to bear in mind, is that when you're telling the story of a ship, that is also the story of the crew.
Yes.
It's not just a collection of moving parts, because without a crew, that's not going anywhere. And every member of the crew is important, because it's all easy to say, oh, well, you know, well, you need the engineers and you need the gunners and you need the captain and that's all you need. Well, actually, if you don't have the radar operators, the guns don't know where to fire. If you don't have spotters, you don't know where the aircraft are coming in to attack. If you don't have signalmen, you don't know where you're going or what the admiral wants you to do. If you don't have the mess cooks, no one gets to eat. If you don't have...
And every cook seems in the U.S. Navy to actually have manned the guns and handed ammo. So
exactly.
Multi-purpose.
Yeah. Damage control crew, you know, they're not fighting, but if the ship's hit, you need damage control crew.
Yep.
You know, the stewards for the captain have been a role since even before the classic age of sail.
Yep.
You know, every person has a job, because let's face it, at the end of the day, the Navy isn't about having lots of extraneous people around sitting around not doing anything. If there was a job that involves sitting around not doing anything, either the Navy or the Treasury Department would very quickly eliminate that from the crew roster.
It's true.
So every man on board has a role to play, even, you know, the photographers. You might think a photographer doesn't have an active combat role, but at the end of the day, how interesting would it be to talk about the history of a ship if you couldn't point to any photos of that ship in action? Yeah, they've still got something to do.
And all those photos provide intelligence.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, as you said, you know, the ship's been through refits post-World War II. You're trying to return her to her World War II status.
Yes.
If someone hadn't taken some photos of the ship in 44, you know, what do you know? You know, does this go here? Does this go there?
Yep.
Plans exist, but we all know how many plans are either completely inaccurate or have been drawn over 16 different times, because they're like, well, actually, no, we're going to put that over here, that over there.
Yep.
You know, And sometimes what's on the ship is actually completely different. So, you know, there are various ships, they found plans and they've looked at it and gone, well, the plan says that this room was set up like this. And you look up and you go, that's physically untrue, because there's a bulkhead where this plan shows open space.
Exactly.
And as we were on the ship earlier, as you pointed out to me, there's a couple of plated over 1.1-inch ports.
Yeah. Shouldn't have been there.
Shouldn't have been there. The ship never had 1.1-inch guns.
Right.
Earlier Fletchers did. She didn't, but she was built with them. You know, go to other Fletcher class, that are preserved, you won't find them.
No.
But
I can't speak for Charette, but Sullivan's and Buff and Cass and Young, no.
So everything about a ship is important, and so even the smallest detail, if you're trying to restore it to a particular state, it needs to be there, and every story needs to be told.
So the way to help, I didn't fully answer the question. The way to help, go to usskid.com, click on the Support Us link, and right at the top of the page, when you get to the Support Us page, there's a donation. Click on that button. Every penny counts.
And if you can, before she goes to dry dock or when she comes back, come and visit. You know, the admission fee helps. There's a really nice gift shop, caters to all interests. And, you know, especially once she gets back and there's extra tours available, there's those as well. So there's all sorts of things you can do to make sure that the star of Greyhound remains the most World War II accurate Fletcher around that there is.
Our favorite leading lady.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And hope you've enjoyed this video about Kidd. See you later.